petitioner's argument, please. Again, this case is set for 10 minutes per side. If you can handle your initial argument in 8 minutes and keep powder dry for 2 minutes rebuttal, that will work best. But as you saw, I'm sort of a softy. And if you need an extra minute or two, you'll get that from me. So why don't we proceed, Mr. Stein.
May it please the court, my name is Benjamin Stein, and I represent the petitioner in this review of the denial of protection under the Convention Against Torture. Remand is required here for two reasons, because the BIA applied the incorrect standard of review, and also because the agency's decision is not supported by substantial evidence. If the court finds that the BIA applied the incorrect standard of review and committed legal error, it does not need to review whether the decision is supported by substantial evidence. The BIA affirmed the IJ decision without providing its own reasoning, and thus the court reviews the rationale of the immigration judge. The IJ's entire rationale for finding that the petitioner would not suffer torture at the hands of his ex-partner and her family is found in one paragraph on page 6 of the IJ decision, which is located at page 85 of the administrative record. The IJ reasoned that the petitioner did not demonstrate a clear probability of the risk of torture for three reasons, all of which are flawed. The IJ reasoned that the petitioner's hometown of El Torero, Michoacán, is small, and Mexico has a large population. It is unclear whether this is relocation analysis. Assuming that it is, the IJ fails to consider the evidence that due to the petitioner's debilitating medical conditions, he cannot work or drive and would need to live in El Torero because his family's home is there and he has no family in any other part of Mexico. The IJ's analysis of risk is thus tainted and insufficient to allow appellate review because we don't know how the IJ would have assessed the risk had he considered that the petitioner couldn't relocate outside of his village where he, his and his family's lives have been threatened on multiple occasions. So that's the first reason. The second reason is that the IJ reasoned that the petitioner's father was not harmed during his last visit to Mexico when he was shot at and threatened by Ms. Blanco's family. However, a review of the transcript at 207 or administrative record at 207 to 209 reveals that the petitioner testified that his father did suffer harm, but that the immigration judge focused only on physical harm and not mental harm. But the IJ doesn't consider that the regulatory definition of torture includes intentional infliction of mental harm. Also, the fact that the petitioner's father was shot at in 2006 and 2012 in his village, the only time that the record reveals an immediate family member has returned to the village, illustrates that the petitioner himself would be at grave risk of being killed if he's returned. Although the petitioner's father was able to escape the gunshots, it is unlikely that the petitioner would be able to escape due to his medical conditions. And the third reason given for finding that there was insufficient risk of torture was that the last threat against the petitioner was a number of years ago. Of course, this ignores that the petitioner has been in the United States, not in Mexico. Also, the threats against the petitioner's father in Mexico should be construed as threats against the entire family, including the petitioner. And the most recent threat occurred on the last known visit by an immediate family member to Mexico in 2012, which was only 2 years before the merits.
Is that clear from the record? It actually seemed to me that there really was only one incident testified to in 2006. And, you know, at various points, the IJ seems to get confused and thinks there's a 2012 incident. But I wasn't sure there was testimony to back that up.
I think what my belief is that the administrative record 207 and 209 testifies to 2012, but I mean, if we're unclear what the IJ thought were the facts, then the remand is also the appropriate response. And that's the issue with the case, is that the court can't affirm the agency's decision based on this sparse, inadequate risk analysis. And then regarding acquiescence, the agency has made no factual or legal findings as to whether the Mexican government would acquiesce in the harm by Ms. Blanco and her family. So with the flawed risk analysis of harm, and zero findings on acquiescence, remand is inevitable. And on remand, the immigration judge should make new findings of fact regarding the likelihood of harm that takes into account the inability to relocate that the petitioner faces from Ms. Blanco and her family. And then it also the IJ also has to make initial fact-finding regarding acquiescence, because without that, the agency is unable to determine whether the petitioner has met his legal burden of showing entitlement to protection under the Convention Against Torture. And it's the agency's obligation to provide a well-reasoned decision that demonstrates it considered all of the evidence and that allows the court to effectively conduct its judicial review, and this decision does not. And then, so turning to the standard of review question, I mean, the ultimate conclusion of whether the petitioner has met his burden of showing that it is more likely than not that he would suffer torture in Mexico, as that term is defined by the regulations, that is a legal question. And the BIA should have applied de novo review to that ultimate legal question. And we know that the BIA did not apply. We know that they applied the wrong standard of review because they said so, because the BIA said so.
I'm not sure I read that sentence the way you do, because there are two sentences before it in the prior paragraph. And the first one says, there's three sentences before. And the first one says, we find no legal error in the immigration judge's conclusion that respondent has not satisfied his burden of demonstrating that it would be more likely than not that he'd face torture upon removal to Mexico. So that's the first. The second is, nor do we find clear error in the factual findings supporting that determination. And then the third, we concur with the immigration judge's conclusion that the evidence presented does not make a prima facie showing. Those all seem to be correct, and to draw the correct distinction between the facts supporting, which are reviewed for clear error, and the other conclusions that are not. And then the next sentence seems to then address the criticisms of the factual findings and say that, well, we could have weighed the evidence differently, but under clear error, we can't do that. Why would we read that as contradicting what was said about applying the correct legal standard?
Well, there is no mention of the word de novo in the decision. But also, so it says the trier of fact could have weighed the evidence differently and come to a different conclusion, right, in the singular, which means that the BIA is talking about the overall burden of proof in the case. Obviously, in a CAT case, there's multiple factual findings, and the BIA didn't say, well, we find no clear error in the various conclusions, right? It was talking about the ultimate burden of the case. Also, finding no legal error is not the same thing as de novo review. Under de novo review, the BIA exercises its independent authority and exercises its own independent judgment, independent of the finding of the IJ, and that just didn't happen. For no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Stein, I have one question about one of the points you made. I think at some point in your argument, you said that a threat against the father should be viewed as a threat against the whole family, or at least a threat against petitioner. I wanted to ask you to please elaborate on your theory for why a threat against the father is a threat against petitioner
Your Honor, I mean, the reason that Ms. Blanco and her family threatened the petitioner's father is because petitioner's family had taken custody of petitioner's daughter. And that was the reason. And also, I mean, the petitioner's father is the representative, and he's the only one that's been back to Mexico. It's fair to assume that if the petitioner responds, they will also be upset that the family has taken custody and harmed the petitioner. And the petitioner's father, in his declaration at 550 to 551, he says, if my son returns, something worse will happen to my son.
In that declaration you just referred to on 550, he says that it happened in 2006, the shooting incident. That's what got me confused, because Brandon Nava says at the hearing on 194, it was 2012, and I couldn't. It seemed contradictory.
And the IJ found that there were two separate incidents in 2006 and 2012.
Father didn't say there were two. He talks about one in 2006. You think he would have mentioned the one the year before when he wrote this in 2013?
The court isn't here, you know, the court reviews the facts that the immigration judge found. If the court is considering, you know, concerns about the facts found by the immigration judge, then remand is appropriate, as with this decision, because it's just, it's ineffective. It's, it does not allow for judicial review because it's so vague and the reasoning is so sparse. Can I reserve the rest of my time, please?
Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Robbins, and I'm here on behalf of Merrick Garland, the respondent in this matter. Good evening to all of you. The issue before the court today is whether the record compels reversal of the agency's denial of petitioner's application for protection under the regulations which implement the Convention Against Torture. Now, there are two things the petitioner had to demonstrate in order to establish eligibility for protection. He has to show the what we call the likelihood prong, that it would be more likely than not that he would face torture if returned to the country of removal. And he has to also establish what we call the state action prong, that the Mexican government would either consent or acquiesce to any torture in question. And the immigration judge in this case reasonably explained that petitioner didn't do either of those things. I would respectfully disagree with my colleague with the notion that the immigration judge's decision is limited to a single paragraph. If you look actually 2 pages before that situation, the immigration judge points out that the petitioner was asking him to infer that his former domestic partner and her family were involved with the drug cartels. And the immigration judge specifically stated that although he recognized that that was the petitioner's opinion, that that opinion was based on speculation and was not persuasive. The petitioner was asking for this inference to be made because his former domestic partner was at one point arrested on a drug possession charge in the United States, and because her brother had been harmed or killed in Mexico. But when the immigration judge asked the petitioner about why the brother had been harmed, he admitted that he didn't actually know what the reason was for.
Can so you address the standard of review? Because that the sentence that he focuses on the first page of the BIA's ruling, certainly isn't well written.
I'll grant you that it might be a little bit muddled, but understand this. As I just explained, there is a major factual dispute in this case, right? The petitioner is asking the immigration judge to infer that the family is involved with cartels, and the immigration judge says, I don't think the facts bear that out. That is not a legal dispute. It is a factual one, and factual disputes are properly reviewed under the clear error standard of review. So when the board says, while the immigration judge could conceivably have weighed the evidence and come to a different conclusion, the clearly erroneous standard of review precludes the board from reversing the trier of fact simply because it is convinced the case could have been decided differently. The petitioner was asking the judge to make an inference, and the immigration judge didn't think that that inference was supported by the record. That is appropriately reviewed under the clear error standard of review. And I would point out that although it maybe is not the most articulate board decision, it seems pretty clear from the decision that the board understood that it is supposed to bifurcate questions of fact from questions of law. As Your Honor pointed out in the first paragraph, it specifically says that they didn't find legal error in the immigration judge's conclusion, but also said that it did not find clear error in the factual findings. On the next page, when it's talking about when it's addressing the petitioner's argument in his brief, it specifically says, we do not find the respondent's asserted disagreement or with or disapproval of the outcome of the immigration judge's decision sufficient to demonstrate that the IJ either improperly evaluated or disregarded the facts and evidence presented or committed legal error. So it's clear that the board is talking about both the facts and the legal conclusions and understands that bifurcation is appropriate.
But is there any indication here, as there normally is, and maybe it's just because we're looking at a 7-year-old BIA ruling, and you know, I think the standard language has gotten better in these rulings. There's no acknowledgement that application of law to fact and discretionary issues are reviewed de novo. That's kind of a standard thing you now see in the BIA rulings. That's
true, Your
Honor. Whether
a
standard is met is reviewed de novo, and they say that. And the words de novo don't appear here. There's nothing about application of law to fact or any of that. There's just factual finding, legal question, no acknowledgement that there's this kind of gray area in between.
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, when it comes to issues of predictive, CAT implicates predictive findings of future fact. And it's so there's a whole body of case law. Back in 2008, the board issued precedential decisions where they tried to review predictive findings of fact, of future fact, de novo. There was cases called Matter of VK and Matter of ASB. The board was essentially responding to a criticism that had been levied against it, that there was inconsistency in asylum and withholding of removal and CAT cases, because you had immigration judges all over the country, and they would have different results on claims that looked very similar, that sometimes had identical evidence, like the same country conditions reports, the same types of affidavits and claims. And so the board tried, said it was going to review predictive findings of future fact de novo. But the courts of appeals basically said that that wasn't permissible, and that the board had to review predictive findings of future fact for clear error. In fact, I believe Judge Fletcher was on the panel when the Ninth Circuit was one of the courts that joined the chorus in that regard. So in 2015, in a case called Matter of ZZO, the board capitulated and said, okay, all the courts of appeals have said that we have to review findings of future predictive findings of future fact for clear error. And that is exactly what the immigration judge is doing here. The immigration judge found that that petitioner did not establish the requisite likelihood of harm if he was going to be returned to Mexico, because his claim was speculative in nature. That is a finding regarding a predictive finding of future fact, and this court's precedent and the board's precedent made clear that that is a finding reviewed under the clear error standard of review. So there's really no reason why the board in this case would have specifically highlighted a de novo finding. All the disputes in this case had to do with whether an inference would be made with respect to the family being involved with cartels, or whether he was likely to face harm in the country. There's also the issue of whether petitioner established that the Mexican government would consent or acquiesce to torture. And to put it bluntly, I mean, the petitioner has never had any problems with the Mexican government in the past. There's no indication that the Mexican government would in any way have any interest in him. His entire claim that the Mexican government would be involved in his torture is almost entirely speculative. And so for that reason, again, the likelihood of harm that we're assessing here, that the immigration judge is required to assess, it just simply isn't met. And that is properly reviewed under the clear error standard of review. I know that petitioner's brief is, focuses on the issue of relocation. I don't read the immigration judge's decision to have made a separate relocation finding. I think the immigration judge was just noted in the fact that it wasn't likely that petitioner was going to be harmed. It just pointed out that Mexico is a very large country. And, when you read it in conjunction with the fact that the immigration judge is discussing, the last threat was made several years ago. You're correct that the immigration judge did interpret the situation with the father as having occurred in 2012. And the affidavit does say 2006, but the immigration judge didn't take any issue with the credibility. There does appear to be some confusion with the dates, but there was only one incident that was testified to with the father. And that was the incident when the immigration judge found it was 2012. I agree that the affidavit seems to be not consistent with that, but I'm not saying that to suggest there's any problem with credibility. All I'm saying is that there were only two incidents, the incidents with the domestic partner and the one incident where the father returned. But I don't read the decision. He mentions that Mexico is a big country and that it has a big population and that this occurred in a very small village. But I didn't read that as saying that he has an alternative, that he can avoid torture by relocating. I don't know. And certainly the board didn't pick up on that particular finding. So I don't know that that's necessarily before the court. Well, the two findings that I think are plainly before the court are the likelihood finding and the state action, but no state action finding. Those are the two portions of the decision that I think the board's decision is upholding. And to put it fairly, I mean, this is not a very strong CAT claim. This is a very speculative claim. I mean, to ask the immigration judge to speculate that the family is involved with cartels because of a drug possession charge in the United States and an incident that occurred in Mexico, which he admits he doesn't know the reason for, that is about as speculative as it gets. And the law is quite clear that when claims are that speculative in nature, they are not sufficient to meet the very heavy burden of the clear probability standard required for CAT protection. If your honors have any further questions, I'm happy to answer them at this time. Otherwise, I think the government would just submit on the briefs.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins. I have no questions. I don't see any from my colleagues, so we'll thank you and we'll put Mr. Stein give us his rebuttal, please.
So regarding whether the IJ's rationale regarding possibly whether it's relocation or maybe it's not relocation, we don't know. That is before the court because the BIA affirmed the IJ's decision without providing any rationale. So the IJ's rationale is before the court. And the Ninth Circuit simply can't affirm on this vague rationale because we don't know what the IJ was implying. Regarding the standard of review, to me, it appears that the BIA applied de novo review to the ultimate legal issue in the case because it said, because it referred to one conclusion that the fact finder could conceivably have weighed the evidence differently and arrived to a different conclusion, which is always referring to the ultimate legal conclusion in the case. But again, if we don't know what standard review the BIA was applying, then remand is the appropriate measure to ensure that the BIA is applying the correct standard of review. Regarding the acquiescence finding, because the immigration judges, all the immigration judges' findings are before the court. Again, the immigration judge does vaguely say that Ms. Blanco's family is not connected to drug cartels. But we don't know if the immigration judge incorporated that into its finding of the risk analysis because the immigration judge didn't say.
What's the issue that should have been reviewed de novo that you contend was not?
So in a CAT case, I think that there's factual findings, but then whether all the factual findings are likelihood of harm, whether the acquiescence, specific intent, whether there's specific intent, but then whether all of those factual findings amount to the legal definition of torture and whether that satisfies the legal definition of torture is a legal issue. So the application of facts to law is a legal issue. And so the board was obligated to review the ultimate legal issue in the case of whether he has met his burden de novo, and they didn't do that.
But he pointed out that the core issue is whether or not the future events would occur, and he said that that's reviewed for clear error.
In Guerra, right, the court held that what's likely to occur in the future is a factual issue. But based on the immigration judge's decision, he says there is no clear probability of the risk of torture. Again, he didn't say harm rising to the level of torture. So we don't know if the immigration judge meant that there was not a sufficient risk of harm, or if the immigration judge is saying, as a legal matter, I don't find harm acquiescence, harm rising to the level of torture probability. Like, this immigration judge decision just, and as it was because it was affirmed by the BIA, is just too vague. And the rationale is too sparse to allow the Ninth Circuit to effectively review.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. I think you are thank over you. Your extended time. So unless one you. Of my colleagues has a question, we will now thank Mr. Stein and thank Mr. Robbins for their excellent arguments. And the Reina Nava case shall be submitted.